Alright! That's a fucking obnoxious way to start a show, isn't it? Alright! What's going on, guys? Oh, shit. Oh, welcome. There's no intro music for this. There will be no outro music for this. Long time no talk. What's going on, guys? I want to kick things off first and foremost by giving a shout out to Bunghole. Big shout out to Bunghole. To be more specific, Bunghole Shirts at Instagram, or at Bunghole Shirts on Instagram. No spaces, just Bunghole. Bunghole. Shirts. If you don't know how to spell shirts, you're retarded. Big shout out to those guys. I think I was on their page one day and I just commented, Bunghole, that's the greatest name for a company I've ever heard. And they sent me a free shirt. And this is amongst the first merchandise I've ever been given in correlation to my show without asking for it, save the letter that was sent to me by Photoshop Steve. That was very nice. Shout out to Photoshop Steve. But and I like their little intro. If you go to their page, at Bunghole Shirts on Instagram, it says, and I like this pitch. This is a great pitch. Get yourself a shirt, bud, or don't. We couldn't give a fuck. I like that. That's good. Watch this show or don't. I couldn't give a fuck. I do give a little bit of a fuck. I'm a narcissist and I like when people pay attention to the things that I do, and all of my my self-worth is attached to my, you know, creative endeavors and shit like that. So please do watch this. But long time no talk, guys. It has been quite some time. Several months since my last episode of Where I Belong. You can catch me over at Dick Dudes, which is obviously, if you're on my page or on my YouTube channel, if you're on my iTunes, then you're going to have seen me on Dick Dudes anyway. But it's been a long time since I had just a spotlight on me, just by myself. And, you know, I've got a lot of catching up to do, a lot of stuff that you guys kind of probably, if you were a fan of the show, wondering what the fuck happened to Where I Belong. And Where I Belong was, at least these solo episodes, was always kind of keyed into the details of my life, you know, my thoughts and things like that. And so I kind of, in that tradition, wanted to get back to doing that. So as you can see, this is no longer Where I Belong Studios, although I guess wherever I am is Where I Belong Studios. I have moved out to Las Vegas. And I've been here for a number of months now. I believe we arrived in June. After a four-day drive across the country, which was about as good as a four-day drive across the country could be. Meaning, like, it really wasn't terrible. We hooked my kid up with a Game Boy. It's got, like, just a Game Boy DS. Or 3D. No, it's not a 3D. It's just a DS. And that kept him, like, surprisingly busy the entire ride. I don't know what he was jamming out to, probably like Zelda and Mario and things like that. And my wife and I listened to podcasts and J. Cole almost exclusively the entire way across the country. Big shout out to J. Cole. I know he's a big fan of the show. And so thanks for getting me through that, homie. But one of the things that I thought was ridiculous about driving across the country, number one, is just the fact that you're fucking doing it. Like, to drive from New Jersey all the way across to Las Vegas is bananas. But the other thing about it is, once you get past Pennsylvania, if you're traveling from east to west, once you get across Pennsylvania, I think the first state is Ohio. You're going to have to forgive me because my geography is terrible. And so I know I'm going to fuck this up a lot, but it's like Ohio, Indiana's in there somewhere. I don't know how close it is or how far it is. Idaho was something that we traveled across. All these fucking countries. These countries. It's off to a great start, guys. All these states are entirely flat and filled with nothing. Like, those states are a conspiracy. Nobody lives in the center of the country. It's completely a vast, empty wasteland of fucking flat sadness. There's nothing going on in the middle of the states. That was one of the most ridiculous things to me. Is we were on one road primarily. I think it was 78 or 80, something like that, for 80% of the trip. probably more. And it's a vast expanses of nothingness. It blew my mind how much you're just driving on this road, and to the left and to the right and dead ahead of you and behind you in the rear view, everything looks the same. Everything looks the same until you get to Colorado. Colorado is fucking something special. You can't say that enough. I'm sure everybody knows that, and I knew that before the trip. And what you know doesn't mean shit until you see it. It's so strange, especially in comparison to having driven across all these flat states, and then finally you get to this place that these real mountains are jutting up out of the earth. And when we had arrived, I lived on a mountain in New Jersey. It wasn't a mountain. It's just a big hill. Okay? Colorado has fucking mountains. And when we first got there, it was in the middle of a storm. And it was almost ominous because off in the distance, you see these... It's a backdrop of gray because the clouds have moved in. But a darker gray silhouette of these unbelievably gargantuan mountains that feel somehow ominous, like giants in the distance fucking marching toward you. It was kind of spooky. I'm sure if you see it in the, you know, for the first time in the daylight and clear skies, it's probably beautiful. And it was beautiful because we did get that view. But when we first came upon it, they were giant monsters looming in the distance. And then eventually we got into them and the storms cleared away, and it was so beautiful. And the mountains of Colorado are something else. And it was June when we left. It was hot in New Jersey. It was hot every fucking place else. And then when you get to Colorado, I guess the elevation, or it was really cold. I think we were looking at like 40 something degrees. And like I said, it was June. You know, we just left 80 something degree weather. Beautiful though. And then after that, we hit Utah. Utah blew my mind. Utah was absolutely gorgeous. Driving through Utah felt like driving through, I don't know, some sort of a Jurassic Park, you know, theme park destination type thing. Like, it felt like a different planet. I was always this person who, whenever people go, oh, I can't wait to go to Italy, I can't wait to go to here and there, I want to go travel to Europe, I want to go to fucking Thailand. Awesome, great, dope places. You should see the world. Everybody should see the world. Have you seen Colorado? You know what I mean? Have you been to... When I was a kid, I'd never really been anywhere. But when I was a kid, I went to Florida several times. Getting off the plane, having come from New Jersey and getting off the plane in Florida, felt like a different world. And it was crazy because it was like a capsule. You hop in this fucking capsule. It was one temperature. It was one weather. Now, obviously, people who fly are like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. For me, having not done much traveling before then or since then, getting off that plane in Florida, I only did it a few times. Maybe I don't know how many times I visited Florida, but I never got used to it. Each time it was like, this is so bizarre. Just a few hours ago when I got on the fucking thing, it was this. And now that I've stepped off the plane over here, it's that. And the same could be said for so many places around the U.S. So if you're one of those people that's like, I can't wait to go see the world, but you haven't been any... America's the world. I feel like there's almost this taking for granted America. People take America, who live here, who have lived here for their entire lives. Not everybody, but some people take for granted the fact that America is such a vastly diverse landscape. You know, I'm in the desert right now. It's drier than a bitch, you know, but that's not just it. You know what's funny, too, is I took all these pictures, and I took tons of, well, I had my wife, because I was driving, take tons of videos, tons of pictures of all this landscape, all these different things that were coming across, one beautiful thing after the next, once you get past all the flat shit, which, you know, the flat shit, there's beauty in that, too. It's just that you gotta look for it, I guess. You get to certain states, you don't gotta look for shit. You know, it's basically dry hump in your eyes. It's everywhere. And something about a camera will never capture what that really is. It's so hard to explain, and it's so weird because I look back on the photos sometimes. They're just sitting in my gallery. I haven't done anything with them. You know, I'm starting to take up space on my iPhone. I got to free up storage. I don't know what to do with these pictures, but I just put them on Instagram. But yeah, it doesn't do it justice. That's why I haven't put it on Instagram, because I'm like, this isn't what the fuck I saw. You know? I'm also one of those people that, like, I don't... Since I got out here, I do kind of consider it a mistake. But like, for example, if you're back home and you're watching this, if you're any of my friends back home or my acquaintance from back home and you're going, I wonder what's going on with Dave. He doesn't post shit. I don't really post anything. I am out here living life, having great experiences, doing cool shit. I just like never, I leave my phone home more often than not. Especially when I'm out with my wife and son. If I go someplace, I'll leave it in the car. You know, I'll lock the car up, I'll leave it in the car. I don't really take pictures of shit that I do. I kind of always have been like that. It's not like I'm consciously like, oh, I need to savor this moment and not post it on the gram because that's fucking corny. Because there is this epidemic of people living in the moment through their phone. You know, they'd rather, like, people who fucking, if you're one of those people who records your show, like you go to a concert and you record your concert, the fuck you, man. That's so ridiculous. Put the phone down and enjoy the show. What are you doing? You're here at this fucking experience, and it's right in front of you, and yet you'd rather experience it through a tiny screen. It makes no sense. And I get it. You want to savor the moments, but I think that's at the detriment of the moment itself, because you want to save these pictures so you have the memories, but your memory is now forever tainted. It's not as dope as it could have been because you didn't immerse yourself. And so that's how I feel, not actively. I don't consciously think of that. I just, like, am going out having experiences, and I don't even think about my phone. So that's how that ends up happening. It's not like I'm actively like, I need to put this down because I need to experience this moment. No, I'm fucking already busy doing it. I don't even think of my phone. So there's so much that I missed out on. But if you're with somebody from back home and you're going, what's going on with Dave? Awesome. It's all good here. Yeah, I'm just thinking if I have much else to say about the trip before I get on to the next part. I kind of feel like, yeah, there's not really much else to say about it. You know, it was a 4-day trip. I drove for, when I left the driveway, it said 43 hours it was going to take me to get here. And so we drove, I believe, like 12 hours each day, maybe more or less, probably less. And then we stayed in a hotel each time. My cat took a fat shit in the car, like, every day. Inside of the carrier, and I didn't let the fucking cat, just in case you're wondering, I didn't let the cat sit in there. As soon as I smelled the shit, I said, God damn it, pulled over, got a bunch of wipes and stuff, cleaned out the cage, what's the cat gonna do? I'm not gonna take him out for walks. I wasn't gonna give him away. That cat is awesome. He's coming with me. I don't know where he is right now. There he is. Hi, baby. Hi. I wasn't gonna leave him, and I'm certainly not gonna walk him. If I try to walk him, he's gonna freak out, so gotta take a dump in the cage. But yeah, we stayed in some shitty little hotels. All in all, the ride was pretty good. All in all, the hotel stays were just fine. Broke the bank doing that, though. So expensive. You know, some of them, I remember one night when we finally got to Utah, and it was late, and I was getting tired, and I knew I wanted to stop and find, and we looked at, you know, whatever, Google, trying to find hotels that were ready for, so you know, that had availability, and it was like 15 in a row were maxed out. And I think it's because when you get to Utah, if you're coming from east to west, Utah is the first point in a while, because there is, before Utah or inside of it, there's like a 200 mile stretch where it's like, this is the last gas station you're gonna see for 200 miles. And I was like, fuck. And we missed that gas station. I had to actually end up veering off onto some shitty little side road in Utah, and eventually did get to a town that had like one gas station, a post office, 3 residential homes, and a fucking like corner store or something like that. And it was just so spooky because there was no cars around, there was no people, it virtually looked abandoned. But we got back on and we got over there, and like I said, I think it was like 12 or something like that, 12 hotels were all booked up, and we started freaking out. And then eventually we found one, had to bite the bullet and spend way more than we wanted to. So we eventually do arrive, and it's beautiful. You know what's really funny is, it's fucking stunning, right? We pull up to this apartment complex because we're staying with my cousin. This apartment complex, to me, is so beautiful. It's surrounded by palm trees. It's like terracotta, like, you know, so I don't know what terracotta speaks to. I don't know if it's the color or the fashion in which they do the outsides of the building. But the buildings are tan, and there's grass. I didn't think there was going to be grass here. There's grass here. I don't know. I'm doing a shitty job of explaining it. It was very pretty. I thought it was very pretty. I thought it was very clean. And I was super excited. And, you know, you kind of have that feeling like, am I going to pull up on this shit and it's going to look terrible? And I was totally preparing myself for it to look like a shithole and preparing myself to be like, that's not what's important. What's important is we're in a new place. This is a new experience. It's going to open a bunch of crazy doors and life is going to get a little... But when I pulled up, it was beautiful. I thought it was beautiful. You know, I wanted to hit the ground hot. I wanted to do episodes of Dick Dudes. I wanted to start a new podcast called Frog Milk with my cousin, Gabe. And that ended up getting a little convoluted because I couldn't do it with Skype. Because typically when I have a guest on, I'll do Skype. But to have a person next to me, I wanted to be able to do one in person for the first time. You know, I've done episodes in person. Nub was one of my guests that was over. I did one in person with my buddy Jay. I did one in person with Andrew Steiner, stand-up comedian. But this was going to be like a co-host situation where he was actually there with me, and I thought it was really going to improve kind of the banter and just the ability to read each other because there's a lot that's lost over Skype. Skype is great, by the way, though. There are a lot of people who I remember when I first started doing the podcast, other people kind of saying to me like it was not a good idea to do it through Skype because the delay or whatever. I've had no fucking problem, and I see professional people who have big podcasts that are doing it through Skype. So but that ended up not working out because of a lack of proper equipment. It all became too complicated, but I still wanted to be really productive. As soon as I got here, I got a job like immediately. I got a good job as a welder that paid really good, and I was exercising, running regularly, eating really healthy. And then something I didn't anticipate happened. And that thing is that as well prepared mentally as I was for this, and as safe as we were when we landed, how everything worked out. I mean, we made friends on day one with neighbors who had children the same age as our son. They're lovely people. Their kids are great. We bonded with them really quickly. There's a lot of really positive things that happened as soon as we got here. I don't think that there is... It couldn't have gone better, given the circumstances, given what we were working with when we arrived. It could not have gotten better, or gone better, rather. But still, unbeknownst to me, at least not consciously, depression started to settle in. And... it didn't settle in immediately. Immediately, we were so enamored and so, you know, in love with the place and all these different things to do. But slowly but surely, my diet started to decline. You know, and I don't want to harp on myself because obviously there's other people. I have a son and a wife and everything. I just don't want to divulge their stories. This is from my perspective. My diet starts going. My health starts going. Then my activity starts taking a nosedive, you know, where like I just find myself sitting around more, not doing much. And my job at the time, because I don't work at the welding place anymore, I've got a different job, but my job at the time, required me to like wake up at 4 a.m. and, it was great though, because I was out of work by something ridiculous, 1:30. I think it was 1:30, yeah. It's fucking awesome. I've got all these hours. To me, it could not have been better. Landed a great paying welding gig. I'm out of that bitch by 1:30. I've got all this time left in the day for activities, to pursue creative endeavors, to be a good dad, to be a good husband, to spend time with my family. I had all this time. But I don't think I stopped and admitted to myself how much stress it was putting on me. Because I knew that people would kill to have what I have. Like, I just traveled across the country. I live in Las Vegas. I got a good welding gig. I got a fucking podcast. I got a great family. Like, I knew that I felt like I had hit the jackpot. And, oh, my ankles. Oh, by the way, this chair is called a Papasan. If you're going, what is that stylish chair you're sitting on, David? It is my wife's Papasan that I have commandeered for the sake of this episode. So anyway, where was I? Living the life, right? Living the life, got all these things, great family, and I'm not sure. Okay, well, I know in this particular case it was the stress of having moved. There's all these, this new stimuli. On some level, I miss home. I haven't had the time to analyze it and look at it, but on some level, I miss home. And the 4 a.m. wake-ups. And then what ends up happening is because I'm up at 4 a.m. and I'm working, I need something like midway through the day. So I start to go to energy drinks. And I specifically went to one called Bang Energy, which is a fucking delicious energy drink. And the reason I went towards it is because it's allegedly ketogenic. When it's, you know, it doesn't knock you out of ketosis. And I'm a big fan of the ketogenic diet because all of my favorite people are, you know, fans of the ketogenic diet. So I just fucking bite their shit and do what they do. And so I was like, oh, cool, this won't knock me out of ketosis. I'll do that. One day, I come home. I've had two energy drinks that day. And we're wrapping up for the night to go to sleep. My son's asleep. My wife and I are about to get in bed. And all of a sudden, like, I'm not feeling too good. I just feel like a shortness of breath, kind of dizzy. And I kind of start to lose sensation in my hands to the point where I don't have the strength anymore to close them. And so I'm like holding a few things. I drop those things and I'm by the bed. And it's that motioning it because the bed's right here. And I actually just fall to the bed and I can't even really speak, maybe in just like a word at a time between breaths. And my heart is going like a million miles per hour. And, you know, I've done some things in life where, like, substances, for example. I've had experiences with ecstasy, I've had experiences with mushrooms, I've had experiences with MD, you know, whatever. A lot of different things. And during those different things, you can have, you know, negative experiences or bad trips. Never really happened to me but one time. And after that one time when I was a young man, I learned how to basically regulate my anxiety. That happened to be, not that I regularly had anxiety, but the anxiety that I had in the moment of the bad trip, I learned how to navigate that through like breathing, you know, just breathing and calming down and realizing that it was myself. It's not the substance really. It's my reaction to the substance. It's my need for control. And so I'm trying to implement that in real life, which should be easier because there's no substance involved. I'm just having this thing happen to me. My heart's going too fast. I can feel it. It's a physical sensation. I can feel it like fluttering. And I'm trying to just breathe, you know, in through my nose, out through my mouth, slow my thinking down, slow my heart down. It's not fucking working. I've never had that happen to me. It's not working. I can't seem to calm myself down. And, you know, my whole body goes pale. My wife's trying to ask me what's wrong. And I can't tell her because I don't want to tell her that specifically what's wrong is my heart. And I don't know, I don't have any more details besides that because number one, I can't even say them because I'm in no position right now to verbalize. But number two, there's not much else. It's specifically my fucking heart. And I don't want her to panic because if she panics, it's going to make the situation worse. And so I just like kept it in and I kind of muttered like the words, you know, shower. I need a shower because I thought maybe I somehow, you know, water helps you. You ever been too high? You want to take a shower? You know what I mean? It was kind of like that. I was thinking, maybe I'm like, maybe this is like that. Maybe I just need to get in the water and calm myself down. You know, does nothing. I come out of the shower and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm just like, I'm just not feeling too great. And she's like, what specifically? I'm like, you know, just not fucking feeling too great. And then I went to sleep, you know? And to me, I thought it was, it got to the point where I was like, thinking an awful lot about death. You know, I started to even entertain the idea that that might have been it. Like, that it was about to happen and that I was about to fucking leave my family. And what's really funny is that the last thing that I would have done on this planet is because I hate, I don't, when people panic, it's the worst to me. I can't stand when a thing happens and everybody starts to go, what are we gonna, oh, because that never fucking helps. I've always been a firm believer in panicking solves absolutely nothing. And that's not even like a profound belief. That's fucking fact. Panicking solves nothing. Anytime anything, it's like one of those fucking fight, like you ever watch a fight video and somebody gets KO'd and there's like a bunch of women in the background and they're fucking screaming, ah! Ah! What the fuck are you doing? Why do you need to audibly shriek? It is doing nothing. And also, if you're the dude who's getting his ass pummeled, the last thing you're fucking hearing is the shrieking of women and the fucking sound of your head bouncing off the pavement. I hate when people panic. It makes absolutely nothing better. And so, since I didn't want her to panic, that would have been the last thing I did before I fucking, you know, surfed out into the underworld or underworld. I'm going to hell, guys. Yeah, so I started to realize that job was, I don't know what that was. You know, maybe an anxiety attack. I've never had one. I never had an anxiety attack. It was pretty physical. It was pretty damning. You know, if that was in fact an anxiety attack, it changed my whole perspective on what an anxiety attack is, because I, to some degree, roll my eyes when people go, I had an anxiety attack the other day. I'm going, what the fuck are you talking about? An anxiety attack. What is that? Because I internalize everything that happens to me. I internalize it. I squish it down and I don't think about it. I don't actively do it. It's just that when I was younger, I spent some time like being homeless and shit and just going through it. You know, I went through the ringer as a young man and I learned to control my thoughts and my feelings on a situation. And to say that you squash them down, like, oh yeah, you just push your feelings down, don't feel, that's not what I do. That's a very what's the word I'm looking for, it's inaccurate, but it's also, the way I do it is much more graceful, I think, because I reason with myself about how this is gonna pass. There's no point in worrying about a thing until you can actively do something about it, and until you can affect it, there is really no purpose in thinking about it. So there, I think a very valid thought process behind my ability to push down things that upset me. It's not just squashing my feelings. That's, it sounds like that's what men do. Men just push their feelings down and they don't think about them. Like, no, I reason my way through it. I know that in the moment of things happening, when I was a young man and I was homeless, to sit there and cry about it is to only make it worse. And like, it is a sad situation, but things will get better or they won't. But right now, you can do nothing about it. And to cry is only making this situation. So maybe it was an anxiety attack. I just was never familiar with that sort of thing. I guess I've never had to push down a lot of stuff that ended up forcing its way up. But so it manifested in a physical sense. And then I started to become concerned with a lot of strange things that I've never typically been concerned with. One of them was like, you know, my father and my relationship to my father. And it was like a weird time to think about the relationship with your father when you just moved all the way across the country. And, you know, my dad wasn't around for like most of my life. And so, you know, it's not like something new, but it also wasn't like terrible. It's not like he's dead or he fucking ran away or anything like that. Like, but I think it was my mind was so aware on some level that things were heavy that it was trying to show me things that were subconscious were bubbling up to the surface, and I was subtly analyzing aspects of my life or things that upset me in ways that I never had before. And then I ended up losing that job. And the reason that I lost that job is because it was way above my pay grade. It just wasn't, I didn't have the skill set. I'm a good welder, but there are aspects of this shop that every single one of them was like, every employee there was a gearhead. You know, they all had lifted trucks and this, that, and the other thing. And they all clearly had an upbringing of, you know, like a wrench in their hand. And so there was a bunch of little subtle nuances about being that type of character that I just didn't have, and I was the odd one out. You know, I was a good welder. I worked hard. I worked fast. There was a lot of things that I didn't understand. You know, I was there every day. I was there early every day. I worked my ass off. But ultimately, that place was just too good for my skill level. And so they let me go, which honestly took a huge weight off my chest, and things started to get better right after that. And I landed another job shortly after that. But it was just like this lesson in allowing things to compile, allowing things to build up and not dealing with them. And honestly, the way to have dealt with them would have been I had to leave that job, because I was so behind on the, not only the learning curve, but the personality that they were looking for. I mean, I'm an extrovert. I do a show. You know what I mean? I that's not the place. These dudes are, I don't know, like dudes that wear Carhartts and they smell like cigarettes disguised as people, and their hands are destroyed and their bodies are destroyed and they're grumpy as fuck. And I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but like, that's the type of person that you become eventually if you keep going down that road, is this fucking like grizzled dude who almost exclusively knows, you know, the mechanical aspects of things, and isn't like an, like, I'm an emotional person to a degree. I'm also kind of like a silly goose and an extrovert and all these different things, and it just doesn't vibe well with that thing. Plus, you know, like I said, there was a lot of lingo, a lot of like, you know, metal shop jargon that I was not savvy to because of my lack of years in there. And so every day it was like fighting tooth and nails and listening as hard as I possibly could to try to grasp what was going on. And I was always just slightly behind the eight ball. And I couldn't close that gap enough. And those people were fucking great and they do a lot of really good work. But I just couldn't swing it there. And so, you know, that ends up taking this big thing off my chest. But then I realized that, I think it must have been anxiety, because anxiety started to eke its way into my life like it never had before. For example, I started doing stand-up comedy out here. And like, I always knew that it was going to be scary. You know what I mean? I always knew that it was going to be some nerves to get up on stage and talk in front of people. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable, the level of anxiety. I mean, I'm telling you, the first time I went to observe. The second time I went, I showed up too late and my name was like really low on the list. So it was like I was number 31. And if everybody's doing 5 minute sets, 5 times 31. You know what I mean? It was like I would have been there for 3 hours and some odd minutes. And so I opted to go home. And I think that time, though, is the time that I drove there and spoke out loud to myself the entire way. I fucking yelled at myself. Like, I'm, you know, I'm a pretty big narcissist and I believe in myself very strongly while also hating everything that I do and having massive self-doubt. It's weird how those two things can go together. So all this self-doubt about, like, you know, what the fuck are you doing? Who are you to think that you're funny, to think that you can make people laugh? You're going to get on a fucking stage and have everybody look at you and shit. And I had to actively drive and speak out loud and kind of remind myself verbally that this is what I fucking want, and it's what I want to go in this direction of podcasting and comedy and becoming a figure like that is something that I want every single time I hit rock bottom. Every time I hit rock bottom, I bounce off the dirt, my mind immediately goes to, you idiot, you've been doing the thing that isn't what you're supposed to be doing. That's what happens overwhelmingly. Each time, every time I lose a job or I fail at something, or, you know, I, even if I have just like personal issues, like with friends and family or something, anything that makes me sad or angry or upset, always one of the first things that happens in my head is like, because you're going the wrong way. You're trying to fit into, you know, a fucking cookie cutter that's not shaped like you. Or a cookie cutter cuts out cookies. You're trying to fit your fucking round ass into a square hole. Every time. And it's hard to say exactly what I want to do, but it looks like this. It looks like podcasting. It looks like stand-up comedy. It looks like being a personality. Because the only thing that I do that brings me a lot of, I have other skills, and I have things that I'm good at. You know, like I said, I'm a good welder and shit like that. But, like, those things don't bring me joy. You know? When I was boxing, I was a good boxer. Those things don't bring me joy. You know, to a degree, it brings me joy. You know, when I would win a fight or you know, learn something new or get positive feedback, like, yeah, it would make me happy. But, like, when I welded something and did it well and got positive feedback, that made me feel good, too. But it wasn't the thing that I would have pursued if left to my own accord or left to my own devices. And I think that's pretty evident with the boxing thing, too, is, like, I did boxing for a while. And even when I left my main gym, I went and sought out other teachers. When I moved up onto the mountain, I went to other gyms out there. When I came out here, it's one of the first things I did too. But, like, ultimately, I've decided to just leave it alone because I know it's not a pursuit that I want. It's a hobby, and it's nice, and it's great for exercise, and I enjoy it to some extent, but, like, it's not the thing that brings me real joy. And the thing that brings me real joy isn't even something that I've ever done. It's only the idea of something that I would like to do, which is, you know, basically being a stand-up or just being somebody who on where I belong, I like to do interesting topics as much as I can. And then sometimes I'll have funny episodes with friends. On Dick Dudes, it's exclusively humor, and that brings me a lot of joy. And doing the stand-up is exclusively humor. And the idea of me being successful at that brings me a lot of joy. So, like, I generally want to speak. And so I had to remind myself of that out loud. I had to even fucking got really corny and was, like, shouting about the things that I had done that I think that I thought that I couldn't pull off. You know, and I also hated the idea of driving across an entire country to do the same thing that I had been doing for, like, 3-4 years. You know what I mean? Which was welding. And it was really hard because the first gig that I landed was a really good paying welding job. And it was, like, on paper it looked great, but I still felt like shit. Like, that, I was sad. I came home from that job because of how frustrated I was in that I was trying so fucking hard to be good at this job. Mainly because they put me on a probationary period and they promised me, I think, $4 more of a raise if they wanted to keep me after, I don't know what it was, some sort of probationary period, let's say like 90 days. So if I was good for 90 days, excuse me, they would have bumped up my pay. And it was good. An extra like $4 on top of what I was already making was pretty fucking good. And, but it made me sad. It made me sad. It made me sad, and I'm the type of person that it's so hard for me to operate if there's this fucking nagging thing in my head that's going, you are not doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing. And, like, you can give me all the money in the world. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe this is, you can give me all the money in the world, and I'll fucking, you know, jack homeless dudes off for a living if that's what you want to do. For all the money in the world, I'm saying. But to a certain degree, there is not enough money that you could pay me to do something that I don't want. Obviously, I'll try it, and I'll keep doing it as much as I can, but ultimately, I'll fail. I'll fail because it's not what I want to be doing. You know, when I have this complex in my brain that I'll be damned if I leave this fucking, you know, this plane of existence without finally doing the thing that I am meant to be doing. And the idea that you even have a thing that you're meant to be doing is fucking antiquated and not necessarily true or false. Like, there's no way to prove that everybody's here to be doing. It's nice to say, like, this is what I'm meant to be doing, or this is what you are meant to do. Nobody fucking knows if that's true or not, but goddamn, it seems like some people get to a place where they feel like that, and I will be damned if I don't get to a place where I feel like that. So yeah, I had to tell myself all this shit while I'm driving to the stand-up place, just to end up getting there and then being number 31 in line. The next time I went up, you know, I don't even know what I talked about. I did eventually show up. I did get my first shot up there. And the first time I got up, I was so fucking scared. I was so scared. I went up there just fucking so nervous, didn't want to do it, stood in that line to go sign the paper, put my name on the paper, didn't want to fucking do it. But I signed it anyway. It's so weird to have this tug of war with yourself, to be like waiting on a line, inching forward as people are signing their name on a notebook. And there's like me, and then there's something forcing me to do it. There's me, and then there's a me that's forcing me to do it. And you know, I sign the thing, and I wait my turn, and I'm just so fucking nervous. And I almost, because right before I had to go, like, I knew I had to piss, and I knew that I was, like, maybe two people away until it was my turn. So I got up, and I was like, I gotta piss. I don't want to have to piss on stage. I don't want to think about anything else except for just, like, trying to do a good job of telling jokes. And, you know, you gotta go into the bar, because I'm in the back. You gotta go into the bar to piss. And then I come back out of the bathroom. I look to my left. That's where the stage is, and everybody's back there doing comedy. I look to my right, and there's the front door. And I'm thinking, fuck, dude. I should just get out of here. I should just go. And luckily I had a friend, shout out to Sarah, also known as Edna. Sarah is a stand-up comedian out here who does a bit where she dresses up like an old Jewish woman from the East Coast named Edna. It's very funny, but I had made friends with her, and so there was somebody there to hold me accountable in the sense that, like, if I left and nobody knew me, I would only have to deal with myself. But I'm so worried about other people's opinions of me in a negative way, if I'm a coward, that was enough motivation for me to stay. And I got up there and I talked, I don't even know what I talked about really. I talked about being a coward, you know, in this example where my wife and I were supposed to watch the neighbor's kid back when I was in Jersey, and it was the weekend and I had slept in, and it was only like 8 o'clock, but all of a sudden I hear another dude's voice in my house. So I guess what ends up happening is he knocks on the door with his son. My wife opens the door. He was very prone to like just stepping into our home, which I get it. You're dropping your kid off in our house. You want to make sure there's not fucking crack pipes and shit. But I was maybe a little uncomfortable. So he steps in the house, and I hear him talking. My eyes pop open, and I'm laying there. I'm like, fuck, man. And you already know that you're fucked. I'm sorry. I'm kind of going into the bit a little bit, and it's not a great one. But you already know that you're fucked when you're asleep and you wake up to the sound of another man's voice in your house. There's just something about being a dude. And that dude could be anybody. It could be a plumber. And you just know you fucked up because you didn't get up to answer that your wife did, and now your fucking wife and son are out there in jeopardy. This could be a murderer. So I wake up to this fucking dude talking, and all of a sudden I hear my son run up to him and go, my dad's still sleeping. And I'm just fucking so embarrassed. So embarrassed. Just, there's no loyalty to children. They just sell you out. And I actually did a bit in another recent stand-up where I talk about how they have no skin in the game, and that children should be jumped into the family like a gang member is jumped into the gang. So as soon as a doctor hands it to you, fucking beat his ass so that he's like, I didn't get my ass beat just to go out here and embarrass my family. You know what I mean? So it wasn't good. And then I think I did a little bit about a homeless guy. I might not have even. I don't even know what I said, honestly. I think... A defense mechanism that I also have, just like squashing my feelings down, is that I forget a lot of what happens on podcasts and evidently stand-up, because it's like a miniature traumatic experience, and my brain just protects me from that. Like, no, we don't need to remember that. So I get up, I don't know, I get some claps, people are nice, you know. That's a good thing, is everybody at the open mic scene is like pretty reassuring, pretty friendly people. You know, and then I went up another time that I recorded. I think I recorded this one, or it was maybe it's another one. But yeah, it is my whole start of this ramble was how that anxiety was like so amplified. I don't know if it would have ever been that amplified if I was back home in New Jersey. And one of the things that it doesn't prepare you for, like, no, there's no way to prepare for losing all your friends. No way. There's simply no way. I now have no in-person friends. You know, all my friends are friends back home that I occasionally talk to. And my friends from the CCC, shout out to the Comedy Content Collective, You can find them at the Comedy Content Collective, or Comedy Content Collective on Instagram, and comedycontentcollective.com. Those are all my buddies, and they're all, you know, they're all on the phone. You know what I mean? It's so weird to not have friends in real life. And so I in my mind, I've made this conscious decision to cultivate healthy people who are outgoing and goal oriented, to surround myself with those people. But it's hard because right now we're like in this struggle of trying to save as much money as we can to get a good apartment and to, you know, do a bunch of other shit that's just like fucking, you know, financial aspects that you never really count on until you're here and you're like, holy shit, and you're looking at this mountain of money that is being demanded from all angles. And so, but the thing that's significant about that is I think, for the most part, to meet healthy, goal-oriented individuals, you need to, you're not going to, obviously you're not going to find them on your couch. You're not going to find them at the fucking bar. You need to go out and do activities and see people there. You know, so one of the things is like a boxing gym. Like I could meet people at a boxing gym out here, or doing stand-up, you know, and open mics are a little bit iffy because most people who do open mics are fucking crack babies. Like they are, it's some of the most ridiculous people I've ever seen in my life. Las Vegas has no shortage of ridiculous people. So yeah, I guess through stand-up, I can make friends. As a 30-year-old man, to suddenly have to go out into the world and make friends is very bananas. It's very daunting. And I am already a skeptical person, and I'm very apprehensive, and I'm very judgmental about people. And I don't think that those are bad things, especially as a man with a wife and a son. To be judgmental is to be analytical, you know, of other people who are trying to come into your life. And it's not just your life, it's your son's life, it's your wife's life. And so everybody kind of gets vetted, and not a lot of people pass the vetting, which is why at this point we have our neighbors, nice people, thank goodness for them, because we spent a lot of time with them. And if I had not been spending that time with them, those days would have been sadder. You know, it's, that's the roughest part. And I noticed that the anxiety and depression, I'm coming out of it, and I've been coming out of it, and every day gets better and better, and I'm getting healthier. I've been lifting a lot, you know, I'm starting to create again, and so I got to keep doing that. But it screws with my interpretation of things. It screws with my interpretation of what people say to me. It screws with my interpretation of, I don't know, everything. Everything is becoming hyper-analyzed. Like I over-analyze everything, particularly people and what they do to me or around me. I notice that like so many more things are perceived as a threat now. So many things are perceived as a threat, which makes sense. I'm heightened because I've just taken this big chance. I've moved across the country. I've got my family to protect, and I don't want to be this way, but God forbid you should slight me. I've noticed. It's just what it is. Things that normally would roll off me now are perceived as like threats with multiple dimensions and depth to them. It's hard to explain, but it's not healthy. I know it's not healthy. I've always been the type of person that like everything rolled off me, and now suddenly it's like, are you trying to get at me? Are you trying to fuck with me? And like, I also have the ability to commit to an idea in my mind. So if I think that you're fucking with me, I will commit to that idea and I'll call you out on it. I think I may have wrongly done that a few times, and probably left some people looking like, what the fuck? So if you're out there and I've snapped on you, I'm fucking sorry. But yeah, man, that's really been it. I think we're finally coming to a healthy place now. We were in a healthy place when we landed, and then a number of months were just like I didn't notice myself spiraling into sadness and depression and anxiety. But now we're on the upswing, and I don't mean to make this all about me. If anybody's out there wondering, like, what about your fucking family? What about your wife and shit? Like, they've all been going through it too. I just don't want to divulge their stuff on here. But everybody together is on the upswing. And other than my own personal baggage, this place is amazing. Las Vegas is fucking amazing. The amount of things there are to do out here, the amount of activities out here is fucking amazing. So we're all good. I don't know if that was even a cohesive streamline of events and things that I went through. These solo episodes are always rambling. I don't know why anybody listens. If anybody does listen to these, I don't know why they do. But yeah, so I kind of just want to get back to it. This is probably as much as I'll be talking about what has happened. And I just felt like catching everybody up, anybody who was interested. And also, it's kind of like a therapeutic thing for me to sit in front of this camera like a psycho and talk to myself. But things that are coming down the line, I'm kind of calling this season two of Where I Belong. I never intended for there to be seasons, but I also never intended to take several months off, and I think I just needed to. You know, it's too much to do. And heads up for anybody who plans on listening to these next few episodes, you're gonna have to read the description, because one of the things that I've become totally fucking obsessed with is this Jeffrey Epstein story, right? This meme, Epstein didn't kill himself. To me, it's this giant conspiracy about a group of powerful pedophiles who are satanically abusing and sacrificing children. And as wild as that fucking sounds, if you feel so inclined, stay with me, suspend your disbelief, and the next, or a good deal of episodes coming up are going to involve guests who are experts, as much as you could be an expert in something that is fringe and to the general public a conspiracy theory, but who are experts in different aspects of this story, because this story has many different moving parts to it. And I know that it would not do the story justice to do one episode on it. And so I've decided to compartmentalize it and to have a guest on who is knowledgeable in one specific aspect of it. And hopefully my plan is to paint a larger picture over time. And I have to put a disclaimer out, because I do not believe or agree with everything that my guests are going to say. I do, however, think that there are interesting things that each of them has to bring to the table. And I will do my best to remain objective and to not allow the audience to think that I'm buying into something that is obviously bullshit. So I'll do my best to challenge them and to be vocal about the things that I am just far from convinced on. But if you feel so inclined to look into the Epstein stuff, there's a bunch of weird aspects to it, from Epstein to Baal worshiping of a Canaanite deity from the Old Testament that requires child sacrifice. That's what this deity wants. The people who worship this deity allegedly are a lot of high-level politicians and celebrities and things of that nature. There is this whole slow unraveling of that story that is mostly done through a group called QAnon, who for the most part has been painted as an extreme right-wing conspiracy group. I'm not necessarily of the school of thought that that's not true. I think that that is very likely that they are mostly a far right conspiracy group, but there are things that I being as honest as I can with myself, am still impressed with in regards to their ability to predict things. And the alleged list of predictions that QAnon has made about political events and world events is actually really long. And I'm very sure that a lot of the things that have come true could be debated. I'm sure that a lot of the things that have come true could be debunked. I'm eager to see if that is everything, because I am right now of the school of thought that it's not, that not everything could be debunked, that a great deal of what they say is at the very least cause for interest, that it should be looked at and that it should be considered. And what I don't like is not talking about it. I don't like bringing it up or having people bring it up or seeing people bring it up or bringing it up myself and having other people squash it immediately as some ridiculous thing. I think that if it's bullshit, then when things are bullshit, the more they talk, the bigger hole they dig for themselves. So I'm going to have a lot of different voices on, from hopefully a lot of different voices, from hopefully a lot of different angles on this whole story, and you know, find out if it's bullshit, find out if it holds any water. And I mean, you know, that's for me, that's how I get information. I've learned through this show that the most learning that I ever do is talking to people directly, to have them on and to talk to them. And so I you know, I'm not a great reader. It's really weird. I'll like read a few sentences, forget what I just read, had to go back and do it over and over again. I feel, for me, the best way to get an understanding of things is to talk to people who are knowledgeable about those things. And so that's what I'll be doing. So if you're not into that shit, if you think it's all conspiracy, if you're, you know, if you're vehemently opposed to conspiracy theories, if this shit just pisses, don't, then just read the description, know what it's about. Because there's going to be a lot of great episodes. There's going to be some people that are repeat guests who have new and exciting things to talk about. There's going to be some people that are friends, new and exciting things to talk about, who just, you know, are fun episodes. And there's going to be new people, new topics, but there's also going to be this. That shit is going to be in there. This QAnon shit, this fucking, you know, this satanic ritual abuse shit, this Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself shit, that is coming down the pipe. If you're interested in it, I'm going to do my best to navigate those episodes and make them as honest as possible. As honest as possible. I don't want any bullshit. I don't want to fucking just nod and agree with my guests just because they were gracious enough to come on my show. That's not what I'm doing either. You know, if there's something that I disagree with, I'm going to push them on it. But I want to be as honest as possible. And if you're into this stuff, to be perfectly honest, those are some of the episodes I'm looking forward to the most. So they should be fucking cool. They should be interesting. They should be compelling. I don't know. That's about it. That is about it. What do I got to say? Nothing really. Go check out Bunghole Shirts at Instagram. Pick yourself up a Bunghole shirt. Possibly the greatest name of any company ever, Bunghole. You know, go buy a shirt or don't. They don't give a fuck. Definitely go check out the Comedy Content Collective on Instagram. The Comedy Content Collective on Facebook. We've got a Facebook group. We've got a Discord chat as well if you want to get in a little closer, a little bit more intimate with us and get to chat with us. There's a Discord as well. You message me about how to get that. I forget exactly how to do that. And what else? Check out our latest episode of Dick Dudes. Dick Dudes is one thing that we have been doing, not as often as I'd like, but it's kept the channel alive, it's kept the page alive, and I think Nathan and I have too much fucking fun. And if you're in for just a silly goose time and you want to laugh at some stupid shit, go watch Dick Dudes, because I have so much fun making them. Just thinking about it makes me smile. You gotta, if I can't fucking make you smile with that show, I'm sorry. I failed you. So Dick Dudes, the Comedy Content Collective.com, Where I Belong Podcast.com. Still exists, it's still up there. So that'll be about it. I know I'm forgetting a bunch of shit, but we'll figure it out another time. Alright, guys. So the next episode should be in about 3 weeks. And it's going to be about that Jeffrey Epstein shit, so if you don't fucking like it, you know, figure something out. I don't know. Wait till the next one. Probably also going to be about it. I don't want to say guess, because I hate when I say guess and then they bail on me. So I won't say guess, but like, goddamn, it's conspiracy time, baby. All right, guys. Sorry if this was a downer at all. I don't think it was. I think I'm out of depression. It's fucking cool. Awesome. Get buff. Look at that. All right. So until next time, peace out. Love you.